Provo makes an epic announcement. Governor Herbert says the investigation of the Attorney General is taking too long, and Salt Lake City unveils the design for the new Broadway-style theater. You're listening to the KUER News Pod for Thursday, April 18th. I'm Brian Grimmett. It was billed as an epic announcement in Provo. Mayor John Curtis announced Wednesday an agreement to make Provo the third U.S. city to have access to Google Fiber's ultra-high-speed gigabit internet, after Kansas City and Austin. KUER's Andrea Smartin reports.
Google Fiber General Manager Kevin Lowe stood on the roof of the Utah Valley Convention Center with the Wasatch Mountains behind him, buffeted by strong winds. He promised all Provo residents would have access to free basic internet, with the option to upgrade to speeds 100 times faster than the average American can access.
Once the network is completed, Provo will be one of the first cities in the world where access to basic broadband will flow like water or electricity.
It's a vision that Provo tried to pursue in 2004 when they built iProvo, a fiber optic network. But the city's system ran into funding troubles and is currently connected to only 9,000 of 35,000 homes. Google Fiber plans to buy the existing network and upgrade it to handle more connections at higher speeds. Provo Mayor John Curtis says that Google will be able to do what others could not.
The beautiful part about today is Provo City has had this dream for a decade. Finally, we have matched the dream with the resources.
It will cost Google at least $18 million to build out the system. That's according to Val Hale, president of the Utah Valley Chamber of Commerce. Google also plans to offer free gigabit internet service to 25 local public institutions like schools, hospitals, and libraries. Pending approval of the deal by the Provo City Council, Google officials estimate that the new network could be operating by the end of this year. Andrea Smartin, KUER News.
Governor Gary Herbert wants to see federal authorities hurry up with their investigation of Utah's Attorney General. KUER's Dan Bomas has the story.
Governor Herbert told reporters at his monthly news conference at KUED this morning that the delay is impacting the Attorney General's office and the investigation has taken too long.
My complaint is, my good grief, U.S. Attorney's office and those involved in it, come to a decision. This cloud hanging over it is unacceptable. And I call upon the FBI and the U.S. Attorney's Office to complete this investigation, let us know where it's at, so we can go on about our business, whatever that may needs to be.
The U.S. Attorney for Utah had no comment on the governor's statement, saying they don't talk about ongoing investigations. Attorney General John Swallow has been accused of being part of a bribery scheme by a businessman indicted for fraud. He's strongly denied any involvement. Dan Bomas, KUER News.
Governor Gary Herbert says the state of Utah is exercising appropriate oversight of the Chevron pipeline spill at Willard Bay State Park. Herbert was asked about Chevron's control of access to the cleanup site at his monthly news conference on KUED yesterday.
We're going to hold Chevron's feet to the fire. They're the culprit. They're the ones that have to accept responsibility, and I believe are, by the way. But we're going to make sure that they do. And whatever the cost of that responsibility is, they're going to have to bear that cost.
A pipeline carrying diesel fuel split open near Willard Bay's North Marina a month ago. More than 20,000 gallons spilled out. The Utah Division of Water Quality says the cleanup effort so far has managed to keep all but a trace amount out of the reservoir. Utah Congressman Rob Bishop is hoping that a regional approach to resolving the status of public lands in Utah might work better than the county-by-county approach that's been tried before. Bishop has been meeting with local government leaders and representatives of environmental groups, hoping to work out a plan that he can get through Congress. He chairs the House Subcommittee on Public Lands. The plan, he says, is to designate lands for preservation as wilderness and lands where development and revenue would be the primary goal. Congressman Bishop spoke to us from a studio at the U.S. Capitol on Tuesday.
Trying to do that county by county is probably too small to find lands that fit both those categories. So we're trying to do a regional approach. We'll start in eastern Utah, and the same kind of concept can be used in other parts of Utah, in which we will identify lands that we will permanently agree that should be in a wilderness setting, in a wilderness category, lands that should be set aside specifically for recreation purposes, lands that could be set aside for cultural purposes, especially with Native Americans, and lands that should be used for economic development, and especially those that could be put into SITLA's hands so that we could get an economic development that would help fund education in the state of Utah.
So exchanging state lands for federal lands would be an important part of this equation.
What we're looking at is primarily on public lands that belong to, that are being controlled by the federal government. But yes, there will be some lands that we'd put in the state control for SITLA. But that is not necessarily going to be the biggest bulk of the land that we're doing. And we're not really doing it to put more land into state control outside of this concept of SITLA lands for funding education.
So for your plan to go ahead, we wouldn't need something like the House Bill 148 process that has the state taking control of federal public lands.
Now, 148 is, I mean, what I'm doing dovetails in with 148. They're not mutually exclusive. And I still think I applaud the legislature for moving forward with 148 and doing what they did this session to try and be prepared for that so that they can show either a judge or the Congress sometimes that Utah is prepared and ready to take control of the lands. What this will do is kind of like an interim step, which in the meantime, before that issue is ever settled, is make some cloture on issues that will provide some immediate economic development as well as some immediate conservation and recreation efforts.
Are there any particular areas of eastern Utah that you'd like to see designated one way or another, for either for wilderness or for development?
Well, yeah. But basically, my ideas are useless. What I'm trying to do is come up with a bottoms-up approach or a grassroots, whichever cliche you like the most, to allow entities, interest groups, and governments to identify what lands they think would be useful for wilderness, what lands they think would be useful for recreation and for economic development, and then build on what their recommendations are. So what I wish to do is actually going to be subservient to what they recommend. My goal is simply to try and keep everyone talking, moving them together, so we don't get bogged down in the minutiae of it and actually coming up with an idea. And I have to admit that I really wanted to have all the details done by December, so I'm a little bit behind in my time schedule, but I want to keep moving it forward. We do have, with a new Interior Department, a new Interior Secretary, I think a window of opportunity when everyone can get together and do something that's unique and different.
Do you have a plan to meet with her?
Actually, I met with her today.
And how did that meeting go?
It was very pleasant. It was a chance to meet one another, and I also did explain what we are attempting to do here in eastern Utah, and she was generally supportive of our efforts to move forward.
And what are environmental groups telling you now as they work with you in this process? What are they seeking out of this?
So far, I am really very happy with the response that we have gotten from every special interest group. They have been willing to send us what their recommendations were and what their ideas are, and they've been very positive about trying to work together to get something through. We may eventually fall flat on our face and fail in this effort, but so far, it's been very nice discussions with everybody, as I think everyone sees this as a chance of doing another cliche, which is a win-win situation.
Would it be fair to say what you're working on here is something like the Washington County Lands Bill, but for a region of the state rather than a specific county?
Yeah, and I hope to avoid some of the pitfalls that were part of the Washington County Bill. Washington County did have this kind of open process, a very convoluted process. I hope to try and streamline that slightly. And to be very honest with you, Washington County bill actually was never voted on in Congress. It was tacked on to another bill. I want to do this in a very open process so that we will create a bill, we will discuss a bill here in Congress and move forward.
So the end result of this process is a bill. Do you anticipate having that in the current session of Congress, or is this something that's going to take longer than that?
I sure hope it's in the current session of Congress. I'm not getting any younger around here.
All right, then. Congressman, I'll let you rest your voice, and I very much appreciate you taking the time to talk to us.
Rob Bishop is a member of the U.S. House of Representatives, a Republican from Utah's 1st Congressional District. He apologized for the condition of his voice, but he's talking about a new regional approach to resolving the status of public lands in Utah.
Salt Lake City officials unveiled the design scheme for the city's new 2,500-seat Broadway-style theater. It's sleek and modern, but designers say they didn't lose sight of the city's surrounding historic architecture. KUER's Whitney Evans reports.
Lead architect for design firm Pelly Clark Pelly. He says the design scheme includes what he calls the city's existing DNA. The new Performing Arts Center will be located on Main Street in downtown Salt Lake City, just south of City Creek Center.
And try to capture so that we can have a building that will be fresh and new, but still part of the same family, like a new child. It doesn't look like anybody in the family, but he's a member of the family.
Pelly says his team also worked to satisfy the community's wishes to revive Regent Street, which is the mid-block street that runs north to south behind the new theater.
Which is very difficult because theaters need a front and they need a back where all of the junk is. We don't have a place to put the junk. We have to make it disappear.
Salt Lake County Mayor Ben McAdams says existing theaters in the region are bursting at the seams.
We turn away many events each year because we have no dates to give them. Popular shows like Wicked would stay longer in Salt Lake if we had more dates available. So building the new Performing Arts Center will allow us to bring more of what we all love.
Salt Lake City Mayor Ralph Becker says the new theater will support and add to existing arts organizations.
It's exciting in that it's a beautiful structure, but for me, as exciting is the way it integrates into the rest of downtown and this block.
The $116 million project is funded by existing tax revenues. Becker says about 20% of the funding will be private contributions. It will be jointly owned by Salt Lake City and Salt Lake County. The theater is slated to open in 2016. Whitney Evans, KUER News.
At 10:15 yesterday morning, tens of thousands of people participated in what is known as the Great Utah Shakeout, a statewide earthquake drill. Here on the University of Utah campus, the drill started with a text message from the University Campus Alert System directing us to drop, cover, and hold on. Not long after that, another text message alert arrived directing us to evacuate the building and head to our designated assembly point in a nearby parking lot. The statewide drill is aimed at helping Utahns prepare for and learn what to do in the event of a devastating earthquake. The event also gives local government and public safety agencies the opportunity to put their emergency response plans to the test.
All right. We'll 30 minutes, we'll have another briefing. We'll just play that.
Here at the Taylorsville City Hall, everyone from the mayor to animal control services is involved in a full-scale emergency response drill. Mayor Jerry Rechtenbach says he believes that nothing prepares one better than an actual experience.
Every time we do one of these, we learn something else that we need to do a little bit better. It might be communication. It might be logistics. It might be some of the things we're talking about right now is how do we fund the emergency.
The state estimates that more than 860,000 people participated in the shakeout. Brian Grimmett, KUER News.
The exhibit called Dead Sea Scrolls, Life and Faith in Ancient Times is coming to the Leonardo in Salt Lake City this November. In making that announcement yesterday, the museum's director, Alexandra Hesse, says it's the largest collection of ancient artifacts ever displayed outside Israel. She says Brigham Young University, as well as Utah's Interfaith Roundtable, will be adding expertise and dialogue to the exhibit.
And in bringing this exhibit to Utah, really what we hope to do is to encourage conversation and introspection around what these precious documents and artifacts have meant to the world historically, as well as what they continue to mean to us today.
Hesse highlighted the role that BYU's had working to index, translate, and digitize the scrolls to better understand them. Israeli Consul General David Siegel says an ongoing relationship between Utah and Israel has BYU at the forefront with its campus in Jerusalem.
The scholarly relationship that we have over these ancient texts is so symbolic of Israel and Utah's future.
The exhibit includes a massive section of the Temple Mount Wailing Wall. The Utah State Legislature and the Larry H. Miller Group of Companies are being credited for the Salt Lake stop of the Dead Sea Scrolls.
Mormon missionaries have had strict rules about email communication in the past, but those are being relaxed a bit. The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints says missionaries can now send emails to friends, priesthood leaders, and new converts. In the past, they were limited to communicating with immediate family members. The superintendent of the Canyon School District is resigning. David Doty told school board members Tuesday night he'll step down at the end of June to take a job with the Utah-based education reform company, Education Direction. Doty faced criticism last year from employees and parents who called for an investigation into district administrators. They said he had created an environment of intimidation. And finally, the nesting pair of peregrine falcons in downtown Salt Lake City has delivered a third speckled brown egg. The latest addition appeared Wednesday in the nesting box atop the Joseph Smith Memorial Building. Wildlife officials say hatching could begin just after Mother's Day, with the young birds testing their wings at the end of June. The falcons have become a downtown tradition as cameras record the pair trading egg-warming duty. And that is your KUER News Pod for Thursday, April 18th. For the latest news and updates from around the state, check out our new free smartphone app that you can download for your iPhone or Android device. Until next time, I'm Brian Grimmett.